This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
A very familiar and beloved guest is back with us today. Linda Moulton Howe has been coming to Dreamland since before I did. When it was Art Bell's Saturday night show, Linda was one of the frequent guests, and she has been ever since. She has a very long history with Dreamland. Linda and I have a very long history together. Linda came to my cabin first in 1988, if you can believe it, all that long time ago. And we have been close ever since. Linda's website is earthfiles.com. And just for fun, I am going to read the old introduction that we used for many, many years on Dreamland when she appeared weekly. One reporter who loves mysteries is radio's leading science journalist, Linda Moulton Howe. She's an Emmy Award-winning TV producer, documentary filmmaker, and the reporter and editor for earthfiles.com, the internet's most respected edge science website. Today, she doesn't have a special report for us, but we're going to have a very interesting time because there is a lot going on. Here she is from Albuquerque, Linda Moulton Howe.
Hey, Whitley, thanks. And reminding that 1988 to 2020 is, what is that, 30-some years?
Yes.
Going back to
my
when
math
you were
isn't
working
good enough.
On... Yeah, you were working on Communion, the manuscript, and I remember that you gave me a copy. It hadn't been published yet, and I thought this is truly the definition of being exposed to a different type of fear. And yet, in Communion was the sense that it wasn't just fear, it was that we were being introduced for the first time in many ways around the planet to much more reality about the UFO ET existence as being a fact and not easily dismissed by the government as throwing up a hubcap into the air at a Pentagon press conference in order to cover it up. So I've always thought Communion was a true groundbreaker, and when you think about all of the people in the human abduction syndrome in these three decades plus who have said to me, when I saw that face on that book, Communion, in a bookstore and felt, and then people describe, a movie goes through their head and they suddenly remember that they too encountered this kind of face. In many ways, your book was a paradigm shifter.
Well, yeah, the book was intended, I think, by the visitors to initiate contact and to see what would happen. And that it worked very well because an awful lot of people are now involved with them in different ways. And so...
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
We are 30-some years later. A year ago, I was getting solid information from people that, because I know their backgrounds, that work in Washington. And they were saying, Linda, by the end of 2020, that headline you have wanted out for so long, it's going to happen, which is, we're not alone in this universe. Whatever else comes down, we are not alone in this universe is a big truth, and it cracks open many other things. So I thought by now, instead of COVID, that we would be dealing in a new world where there was finally a power broker decision that humanity as a whole was going to be allowed at least into the revelation that we are not alone in the universe, and that it would be accompanied by explanations from me, you, millions of other people who are trying to deal with the truth of other intelligences here and throughout the Milky Way galaxy and beyond, that acknowledging the truth that there are other intelligences in this universe does not in any way lessen the impact of Buddhism, of Hinduism, of Christianity, of whatever religious block you want to go to. In fact, it should be reported to the world in the sense that this is a much greater universe than we were originally taught, and that that reinforces whatever the divine field is behind the creation of the matter world is even greater. If it came into the world with that context, I think it would be positive, not negative, and not cause chaos. And so my question to you is, instead of solid revelation about the truth, 2020 appears to be a year of continuing destruction, mayhem, rebellious revolution, and that the sense of getting into 2021 without there being more destructive civil war action is beginning to be of great concern to everyone. I'm curious if you have any insights about why this year of 2020 seems to be literally a whole new revolutionary moment that is going to propel itself through the rest of this decade, with humanity being divided more than being brought together.
Well, I have a lot to say about that, and I'm going to say it, folks, for the Free Dreamlanders right after these announcements. Subscribers will keep. Linda Moulton Howe has appeared many, many times on Dreamland, 85 shows in total. It is a literal treasure trove of amazing Linda Moulton Howe material. Listen to this excerpt from November the 8th, 2013, of an interview she did with an officer from Ellsberg Air Force Base talking about a UFO incident that took place there. As we listen in, she is just asking him about a guard who woke up in a field, unable to explain how he got there.
When he became conscious and found himself in the field, his gun was off to the side of his body.
It was in the mud.
You do not think he had two shoes and socks off?
You know, he started walking towards the lights that were reflecting up close. He didn't know what the lights were, but he was going that way because that's where it was lighted. After he started walking, he realized that one of his boots was missing.
Huh.
It was a fully laced combat boot, which was not a zipper type, so it had to have been taken off.
You can listen to the rest of this interview and so much more. Linda Moulton Howe material, all kinds of extraordinary material on unknowncountry.com, plus meditations, all kinds of experiences, Whitley Strieber audiobooks. It's a really rich treasury of material, unlike anything else in the world. Get involved in unknowncountry.com. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today. We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, earthfiles.com, where you can subscribe and get involved and buy her remarkable books, and also her weekly YouTube channel. Her show is not to be missed. It's Wednesday evenings. What time is it Wednesday evenings where you are, Linda?
7:30 to 8:30 p.m. live mountain and in all time zones around the world. Thank you, because I feel that the Earth Files YouTube channel is one of the valuable abilities to discuss with people the question like I'm just asking you and others in this revolutionary time. So thank you.
Well, okay. I have to tell you, folks, I'm there every Wednesday night, and if I should miss it, which I did last night for no fault of my own. My computers were crazy, which I don't even want to go into it. In any case, I will always catch up because it's a really good show. Linda is putting out an extraordinary amount of energy, effort, and above all, the wonderful information.
Thank you.
Well, let's go back to your question now, Linda. That's let me tell you what the best way to circle around this is to think to myself, why would she ask that question and contextualize it in terms of religion? And the reason that's surprised me is that I'm now working on a book about Jesus that re-envisions the whole meaning of Jesus. And
yeah, I remember we had a short discussion about I'm so interested. But you can't deal with finally getting the public, we're not alone in the universe, out to the world without acknowledging that there have been avatars and that the avatars have talked about various facets of you don't understand what happens at the moment of death, that he who believeth in him who sent me shall have everlasting life. These are huge, gigantic, profound issues. We are not addressing anything with truth on this planet any longer, except for you, me, and a few others,
Those issues are, of course, at the center of the book. That's why it's a new vision. And, you know, I use my implant now as a research device. I'm not going to explain it. Everybody who listens to this show knows about it. And if you don't, just go to my website and search on the word implant. You're sure to find something. And if you don't find anything, then write Whitley@Strieber.com and I'll tell you about it. In any case, I use it for research, and it really has led me through the leaves of time. And what I've been doing with it is looking back into moments that are relevant to the story, to the book, and then constructing out of the modern scholarship that exists descriptions of what actually did happen. And it has been totally fascinating because we know what happened. We just don't know the difference between what really happened and what we think might have happened. And but the reason I am approaching your question in this way is that there has to be a coherent perspective about these avatars if we are going to proceed with contact. Because right now, if the visitors show up, there are a number of things are going to happen. The first thing is they will experience involuntary cultural colonization. The whole culture will turn toward them. And when I say show up, I mean even just be admitted by some undeniable level of officialdom, that they are not just that there are UFOs here, but there are actual beings from other worlds here. If that happens, then our culture redefines itself in terms of its relationship with them, and that they do not want. And if you look at around this world, you see what happens when that kind of cultural colonization occurs. The culture that thinks of itself as inferior because it has less good technology, its energy is dissipated into its relationship with the more technologically advanced culture. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't valuable. It's a perfect example is the Native American cultures, or the cultures in New Guinea and all kinds of different places. They had value, but they were disempowered by the feeling that the technologically advanced culture must be better. And, you know, they basically wanted the good pots and pans. And
wasn't that one of the issues in the Robertson panel and that group back in the end of the 40s, is that they were trying to say that if we told the world that the UFOs and the beings that were being pulled out were in fact clones, that we were in fact dealing with what appeared to be artificial intelligence in an organic doll-like form that they began to discover, that it would pull the rug out from under humanity psychologically being able to handle an advanced intelligence, and that that was one of the main reasons that Truman and the various executives sent said, this is a secret that no one is ever to tell.
Well, I think
that's antiquated. I do not think that applies to today.
Well, I don't think it does because, I've had a substantial amount of physical contact beyond what happened in the beginning. I wouldn't say it's, you know, I have never been able to sit down across a table from one of the Greys and just chat. I've come close to that, but not quite. But they don't seem to me to be robotic. I think that when people see that, it might be because they themselves are afraid because.
Oh, well, let me just be clear. I mean that a lot of the little bodies that have been in abductions and have been retrieved from craft that were defined in autopsies as cloned, I think they are in a category of an artificial intelligence, but that the tall grays and others are organic intelligence. It's just that they work with a huge variety of AI, I think.
I don't know. The last one I saw was in this apartment about 4 or 5 months ago, and it was about 2.5 feet tall, and it was certainly very much alive. I mean, it could have been an artificial intelligence, I suppose, but it didn't seem like that. It seemed to me like a completely alive being. I was almost going to say human being because that's how I reacted to it. It was only here for a few seconds, darn it. I had been trying to get them to show up for, at first I was asking for one of them to live here for 2 weeks. And then I finally got down to 24 hours. Then I said, well, what about a minute? And I got 5 seconds. But at least I got something. Since then, I haven't tried again because I know that it won't work. But what the reason for this extreme reticence is, I don't fully understand. I've thought, what if they're terribly evil? And we would sense that if we saw more of them. And yet, they've been with me for 30 years, more than 30 years now, and I am leading this extraordinarily rich life. And the work I can do, I am light years beyond where I was as a human being when this started. I have my implant, I'm enhanced in ways that don't interrupt my free will, but do amplify my intellect. And I think that's extraordinary.
Well, what do you think is the relationship between the Greys that you have had a relationship with and the Nordics, the Reptilians, the Oranges, the Blues, that there is a panoply of different descriptions, at least to the human eye and mind? And is there a relationship? Is there antagonism? Is it true that there are at least three civilizations competing on this planet that have been warring with each other over this laboratory Earth for 270 million years? As one DIA analyst told me back in December 1999, it would explain why there have been religions pitted against each other. It would explain why that there have been races pitted against each other. If this is a huge laboratory and that there are competing other civilizations that manipulate affairs while humans are always kept in the dark.
You know, I just don't know a final definitive answer to that question. I did understand that the tall blonde people who were here in the 90s and 80s, who are now apparently gone, were left or were pushed out because they were too too willing to share their themselves and their technology, and the danger of cultural colonization was considered so great that they, because they couldn't do it their way, they left. And I think that we are making great strides in terms of our own technology. And I know that in terms of weapons and design and all kinds of different things, we're getting to a point where we can establish a human position in connection, in relationship to all of these other levels of entity. And we can, in other words, we can stand on our own two feet and hold our own. And when that really happens, and it, the critical moment is the moment that we gain control over gravity. When we gain,
hasn't that already happened? And that's one of the big technological underground.
It may be true underground, but I'm talking about the open world. Mm-hmm. Because what happens underground doesn't matter to me. Because it's irrelevant to me. So, you know, the breakaway civilization and so forth. It may exist, but who cares? I'm interested in my grandchildren now, not in some thing that. That, you know, maybe there are people walking around on Mars and whatever, but that doesn't matter to me if we can't do anything with it. What I'm interested in is what can we do with it? Because I'm out here in the ordinary world, and it's the ordinary world that matters, because this is where the final events will take place, that this species either rises to another level or sinks. This is where it will, and not in these hidden worlds. So that doesn't matter to me. And so circling back, it's when we gain control over gravity and learn to move in whatever way they move. I don't know what it is. I know it's very fast, because I've been in one of these UFOs. I've actually been in it, and it took, we went to from upstate New York to Boulder, Colorado, in what seemed to me to be a matter of seconds. And that was pretty impressive. Other people who went in it from my cabin, there was a period of time when, if you can believe it, people were given rides in this little thing, and were taken up to the out into space and back again in seconds also. Some of them pretty far as we can tell, but it all happened so quickly and the visibility was limited, so no one's absolutely sure. In any case, once we have in the public space that kind of technology, that's when we are able to meet all of the others, whoever and whatever they are, on terms of equal footing. And until we can do that, no one will be allowed to colonize us culturally.
You know, Whitley, there's a great irony in contemplating that there was a pyramid building intelligence, and that the pyramids were built to function as communication systems and energy systems, and that as we go in toward the middle of the 21st century, that out of all of, finally, if we ever get to the truth, that there would be a rebuilding program of pyramids.
Well, you know,
to
you can still
establish communication and energy that would not have anything to do with the fossil world.
I have wondered if the Great Pyramid might not still work. I mean, it's certainly intact enough to work. And if you left your body and entered it, would you not be able to use it to accelerate to the star systems that the little windows in it point at? I don't know the answer to that question, but I just wonder about that. And I have a feeling that it may have been used that way in the past. And that would be one of the reasons that the ancient Egyptians had such extraordinary wisdom. You know, the first religious text is the pyramid text in the Temple of Unas in Egypt. I mean, the Pyramid of Unas in Egypt. And it is also, I think, the last text that reflects the existence of a science of the soul. And that by that I mean a set of theories and principles that can be applied consistently and have measurable results that are predictable. And you see it in the pyramid, but after that, things decline, and that's the oldest religious text we have. After that, things decline more and more into mythology. The gods begin to appear, and
which were ETs.
Well, they may have been once, but by the time we were dealing with them as disincarnate entities, they were not anymore. They may still have been in that early time. I think that it's possible that some of those entities that we think of as that they called gods were from other worlds. I think it's perfectly obvious in the Bible, in the Book of Enoch, and it's not in the Bible, but that they were engaged with entities from other worlds. And we just don't, our modern world doesn't want to face that, but it
well,
seems clear that it's true.
Carvings of Shamash, the Sumerian god of the sun, and he was clearly, just based on the humans, the way they were depicted, the roly-poly humans were at least half the size of Shamash, and Shamash was carved in the same level of reality as the little humans, and that meant that Shamash must have been 12 feet tall.
Right, or it meant that he was that impressive. Because remember, in those times when someone was really impressive, they were depicted as being physically very large. But here's another thing. When you're with souls that are really advanced souls, they are often seem very large, even humans. And I've been with such entities, and their size is somehow connected to their level of consciousness. It's really very interesting. You bring that up, and I think to myself, were these carvings made of events that happened in the physical or in the semi-physical? In other words, the state of the ka, the second body, as it were, the electric body. That when I'm out of my body, which the visitors will take me out. I only got out once on my own, and unfortunately, I didn't realize there were rules, and I disobeyed them. I went places I shouldn't have gone, and I've never been out on my own since. But they will take me out from time to time, and.
Well, I have always looked at those carved limestone, whether I was in the Louvre or whether I was in the British Museum or I was in Egypt, walking with my feet on the stones in Cairo and in at the Winter Palace, and I have always had the sense that I was amid limestone carvings that were a reflection of what was there 5,000, 10,000 years ago, and that distinct difference between the tall bodies and the shorter bodies was a depiction that was a reality of the way things were in the matter world here at one time.
That's possible. I wouldn't say that's impossible at all. One of the things is that for some reason, we really have got blinders on. I've often thought to myself that we've been blinded. You know, we're blind and we're lurching blindly along. We don't know what happened in the past. We don't know who we are, why we're here. I think to myself, is this a prison? What in the world is going on? And then I think of John Brandenburg and,
Death on Mars.
Yeah, that and that possibility that there was in the very distant past a war between Earth and Mars, and we both won and lost in the sense that we destroyed the surface of their planet, but they captured our souls?
Yeah, but those that were in those wars were not Homo sapiens sapien. Homo sapiens sapien has a Homo erectus beginning only 2 million years ago, and there was a crossfade with Neanderthal that was about 40 to 45,000 years ago. That is the sole level of existence of this current humanoid model on planet Earth. And that war that John Brandenburg has discussed as a nuclear physicist PhD, he thinks that it happened and no later than about a million years ago on Mars.
Yes.
Well, that would be going a million years back to Homo erectus time when it was a small primate in different evolutions. What we are today, Homo sapiens sapien, from everything I've been told, is that we are a genetic manipulation of already evolving primates that would have, the last one would have been Neanderthal, and that the genetic connection between Neanderthal and Homo sapiens sapien is seen at the genetic level. Papers have been written about it. But the question then leads to, they had a larger brain capacity than Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien,
yeah,
and they put flowers on graves. Why was Neanderthal faded out and the seemingly more violent Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien faded in? Why are we here and not the Neanderthals?
What if we ourselves are the prison in which the souls are trapped? This body is a prison. It's not, there are no walls here. We are the walls. The flesh and blood of the human species is the walls of the prison. We have to take a little break on that note. Free Dreamlanders, free yourself from the prison of your life by listening to these terrific commercials and doing what they tell you to do.
Support unknowncountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of Close Encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today.
We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, earthfiles.com, her terrific weekly YouTube live show, 7:30 p.m. around the world. Don't miss it, every Wednesday night on YouTube. How do you find it? It could not be easier. Just go to youtube.com. Is it youtube.com/earthfiles?
The easiest thing is go to earthfiles.com and click on the link that I have right at the top of my news page, and it takes you right there.
Because I've got it in my favorites, so I went on YouTube, and I think I can just jump to it immediately. So anyway, it's terrific, and don't miss it, folks. It's a really fascinating journey that Linda Moulton Howe is on. One of the great journeys of the world, in my opinion. She's considers herself still to this day to be a reporter, but she's much, much more than that. And that's a wonderful thing to be, don't get me wrong. But Linda has taken this into areas of exploration that are beyond what we would call reporting and have to do with the journey of the human species and the journey of the soul. And if anything, Linda has become maybe the first reporter in the world of the soul. Would that make some sense?
Well, thank you, because when I think about my life looking back to being a young child and how many times an inner voice that I have come to think of as my soul's ability to communicate to me and how many times those communications have saved me in what would have been mortal events, have guided me when I was in treacherous landscape. That if we were educated on planet Earth about the true reality of an existence that is reflected in the New Testament, in this one quote in Matthew that has always stuck with me, and that is, he, this is Christ speaking, he who believeth in him who sent me shall have everlasting life, with the corollary, the other side of that statement is, he who does not believe shall not have everlasting life. As if some line has been drawn in this particular universe about, if you have a relationship with your soul and you are growing and that soul is evolving, that soul will continue to evolve into eternity. What Roger Penrose would say, Linda, the cosmos has no beginning and no end. That infinity that is incomprehensible to us is the true nature. That the universe's are not coming in and out of existence, out of explosions, but of cycles in time. That's Penrose talking to me in a fascinating interview. And it made me think about this relationship of, if you come into existence as a small child with already established communication that others may not be experiencing and you trust it in your life. For me, I'm 78, so it's nearly eight decades. And that I look back with the idea, what is the most valuable thing that I have learned in existence on this planet, trying to navigate the difficulty of understanding animal mutilations, human abductions, and a whole lot of facets that have been, for some reason, my challenge, and then the challenge to communicate. The one thing, if I were standing in front of those that would be in the category of an avatar, what is the most valuable thing that you have learned? The answer now, this day, freedom. Freedom to think, freedom to know truth, freedom to pursue love. Freedom is far more important than money. The barter system is probably the biggest trap on Earth. Who put it in motion that every individual would have to have some barter in order to survive? When we know through the insights of the abductees that there are other planets and other existences where your trade-off of life for barter does not exist. And therefore, in a strange way, Whitley, when you said, are we on a prison planet? In many ways, it could be argued that we are through the barter system. It keeps only a tiny percentage of power brokers in control, while the rest of humanity is denied not only the ability to have food when they want it, in many cases, but it denies people the ability to move what their internal desires of creating, no matter what it is.
Yes. And
so many people are struggling just to get from sunrise to sunset.
Most
people. That shouldn't be. And if we are bodies that contain souls, that know more, that know different, then at the moment of death, out of this existence on Earth, the question I now have in my own mind, what does this knowledge of being entrapped by a barter system in a planet that otherwise is a beautiful, gorgeous laboratory that should increase freedom, not reduce it, What is that teaching the divine field about this matter world?
One of the things I think I figured out, is this. If you look at the abduction and close encounter reports in the world, you find if you go to the United States, Canada, and Australia, that's where most of them are reported from. And what interests me about this is that these are the most open cultures. And there are reasons, for example, there may be a lot of them that take place in India, but people don't see them as that. And the same is true in the Middle East. In Europe, there's so much cultural opprobrium that very few people would admit to something like that, and that includes England, although there are a few more in England. And also, if you look at these three countries, you have in all three of them quite a varied DNA pool, more so than almost any other areas on the planet. And if you look at maps of abductions, which I used to have and I don't have anymore, I'm sorry to say, you find that the great number of them that were reported were reported at least back in the 80s and 90s from areas, suburban and exurban areas around or near big cities. And of course, my cabin was in an exurban area near a big city. It was 90 miles north of New York City. So when you put all of that together, what you see is somebody who doesn't want to do what they're doing in an open environment. I mean, like in a densely populated, environment, but rather in an open environment where they can be undisturbed. That means there's a physical element to it that they can't hide at times, obviously. Now, they were there because of the freedom. And when you begin to compromise that freedom, I think they care about that. That's my sense of it. I think that as we have gotten into this situation where in the United States especially, millions of modestly people with modest incomes have been tricked into believing that somehow or another billionaires will protect their incomes. And I always say to myself, don't they understand why rich people are rich? They're rich because they don't give things away. You know, there's no largesse pouring out of their hands. And we have a tremendous concentration of wealth going on in this world. It's unprecedented since the time of the late Roman Empire.
Right. Remember in Jim Marr's book, Depopulation, that he quoted that Swiss guy who did an investigation trying to understand where the progenitor sources of all of the money on the planet went, and it boiled down to 28 families on Earth. 28 families you could trace all of the money in the Earth back to.
Yeah, exactly. And that was true. That was even more true in Roman times. And of course, the result was that people fundamentally lost faith in the Roman Empire, and it died. And that will happen here too if these tiny number of families don't continue to produce a reasonable level of prosperity, which they are not doing. So, I have to say, just an aside, mentioning of Jim Morris, I miss Jim so much.
Oh,
gosh,
I
he
do
was
too.
Good. He
and
was
for
so.
For people listening, one of the most delightful human beings to know, work with, was Jim Morris. He
Absolutely.
Had a great sense of humor, and he had a penetrating mind. And when I think of some of the best discussions that I ever had with a colleague on any kind of subject, it would be Jim, because not only was he a penetrating intellectual, which he then sort of disguised with his hat and his tremendous sense of humor, and there was such wisdom.
Yes.
Jim was very wise.
I knew a lot of Texans like that who looked sort of and talked like Jim, but were not fools. And he certainly wasn't. And you know, by the way, folks, if you want to treat yourself, there are loads of Jim Marr's interviews on unknowncountry.com. Jim hosted Dreamland from time to time for a while, and we interviewed him many times. And the shows he hosted are absolute delights. He was something else. Yeah. And I am so sorry.
And I think Jim is in another dimension, quite literally, because I really do think that souls come in and out of containers and that we're in a multiverse and it is more complex than we can comprehend, and that he's somewhere. And that there is interaction. There was a saying that somebody said to me, in her death was her victory. It's sort of a metaphor for meaning that you can struggle with a lot of things on earth. But what happens with that soul after may be that it is actually contributing wisdom and information to the divine field that in the end affects what happens to the living being souls on earth. I really do feel there is a dynamic like that.
Oh, I think so too. And I think that one of the things that, well, you know, after Annie's passed away, I learned so much about the interaction and the flow of consciousness between the bodies and the disembodied level of humanity. Mankind is itself an incredibly complex entity. I think of mankind as a single entity with a lot of kind of nodes of individuation. It doesn't feel, I don't feel like I used to, that I was kind of alone inside myself, because when you live with the dead in your life, like I do, you know, that part of you goes away before your body dies. You become more like them simply because it's more realistic. And speaking of realism, free Dreamlanders, sit up and take notice and listen carefully. Here we go.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keen says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
This is Whitley Strieber. Listen to me now from June of 2010, talking to Alan Lammers about an incredible thing that happened to him on the island of Sulawesi in Indonesia.
Here you are in South Sulawesi, in the little town in the district of Sandu Batu. What happened? You were told something rather strange.
Well, we were told before we went, like my friends that I work with the NGO, they told me that when you pack, because it kind of happened by accident, I went out to buy a raincoat. It rains quite a bit in this part of the world. And so I went out and I bought a yellow raincoat. And my friend said, "I'm sorry, you can't take that to Walla Walla." And I said, "Well, why not?" And he says, "Well, you can't wear that color." So anyways, excuse me. So I thought, okay, well, what colors can I wear? They said, "Well, you can only wear black or white. You cannot wear any bright colors, no bright green, especially no yellow. And, you know, that's all you should bring." And I said, "Well, what would happen?" And they said, "Well, people disappear."
You will find the rest of that story, and it is brain bending in the June 5th edition of Dreamland, June 5, 2010 edition of Dreamland in the unknowncountry.com archive. This archive is one of the richest of its kind in the world, probably is the richest of its kind in the world, filled with extraordinary shows, of which this show is certainly one, this show with Alan Lammers. You will never have heard anything like it. It does what Dreamland is here to do. It opens your mind to the fact that we live inside a hidden reality that we prefer not to acknowledge, but not here. Here on unknowncountry.com, we do acknowledge it. We live in it and we love it. Subscribe today. You can't go wrong. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and get started. We're talking to Linda Moulton Howe. Her website, earthfiles.com, her YouTube show is available. You can go to earthfiles.com and click through to the YouTube show. It has well over, I think, 150,000 viewers.
We've broken through 153,000.
There's a reason for that, folks, and that's why you should go over there and see what that reason is. Okay, so this is fascinating dialogue, but we're kind of in a foggy area because we can't tell anything for sure. My wife came back, as you know, after she died, and we chronicled that together, she and I, in Afterlife Revolution. And she's still very much a part of it, but she's also projected into another body now. In other words, she has reincarnated. But the thing that's so fascinating and that I discovered through her is that that does not mean that she's gone from the other level at all. And if you think about it, there would be something that has all of the memories of all of the lives you have ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
And that is still there, and I'm still in touch with it. Now, it's less and less in touch as time goes on because the child that's involved is growing, and the more the child grows, the more the consciousness is invested in this increasingly complex physical being.
Has she reincarnated on Earth or another planet?
No, on Earth. I know the child.
Uh-huh.
I know the child. It's not a secret to me, but it's not anyone in my family, but I do know the child and I know the family. And the reason I know this is not a secret, and she didn't tell me herself, but she sort of did. But two psychics, both of them very powerful, both of them, neither of them aware of the other at all in any way, told me that this would happen separately within weeks of each other. And I thought to myself, I remember one of the first things Annie said after we had established contact is, "I'm not Anne anymore, but I will always be Anne for you." Mm-hmm. And so when this entity comes to me, I feel the presence of Anne, even though I know that I'm actually dealing with a much more complex entity that has had many lives. And the part of me that's that is they've come into union with one another. And this is all what can happen if you live beyond the veil between the worlds, which, by the way, the Greys do, and I suspect some but not all of the ETs who are around here do. They don't have the veil between the worlds. And to them, projecting a body into the physical space is a much more of a technological process than it's a natural process in the sense that the body is grown and then it's fitted to a soul like someone putting on a suit of clothes. A few months ago, I interviewed Kathleen Marden on Dreamland about her book Extraterrestrial. I think it was called Extraterrestrial Contact. Abducted. Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. And she describes in there a really incredible story about a man who had a little private airport, and he started to get UFOs coming in, and he began to signal to them. And one night, they ended up inside his hangar. He lived on the airport. It's a little place. And he was in his – one of them showed up in the room where he slept at the foot of his bed, and he fired a gun at it and shot it. And it exploded into a mass of sort of material. And then he was haunted by this thing. In other words, its soul came after him. it's a remarkable story. And this is because eventually, I'm sure it ended up getting a new body. But for all we know, they have to buy them. Like we buy cars. We don't know how it operates, but I do know this. For them, there is no break between, there's no veil between the living and the dead. They are not doing lives like we are, where we do lives to basically energize our souls. And in order to do that, you have to be in the time stream. Because if you're in the time stream, then everything that happens to you is totally spontaneous. But, you know, they want to take rides on this. That's why that my basic relationship with them continues, because I know how to give them access to my physical experience. I know how to give them space in me so that they can participate in the continuous sense of the new that is the human experience. And they love it. They really go for it. And, you know, going back now to when we were first together at the cabin, one of the things we discussed that I've never forgotten is the idea that there might be some level of this that eats souls, that consumes souls. And not, now I know more about it then. I didn't know quite what we were talking about then. I don't think either one of us did. But when a person dies, the second body is literally ripe, like a ripe fruit with all of the experience of their life. And if someone could come in and take that would be an incredibly evil theft. And sometimes some of the entities I've seen have been dripping with an evil, and they've been like addicts. And I have a feeling that some of this has to do with that kind of entity and the stealing of life experience.
Well, I remember one of the first things that you said in one of the first two or three conversations, you said, Linda, you have a shaggy soul. And I asked you, what do you mean I have a shaggy soul? And you said, I don't think that you have been harvested for a very long time.
Wow. You know, I don't.
That's you.
I don't remember saying, I remember the shaggy soul part, but the harvesting, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you don't need to be ever harvested. If you can take control in the way, you know how to take, because you turned a long time ago to the light, and you live by out of love, compassion, and humility, and you open yourself to the light, then you belong in another level, and there's no one's going to harvest anything from you because you belong to yourself then. You're an individual in this universe. You have a life. Because once you are on a track toward immortality, toward that ecstatic stasis that is at the end of consciousness, at the leading edge of consciousness, no one's got the right to take anything from you. You don't have, you're outside of that. I think. I'm pretty sure.
Well, you know, I can share something very intriguing to me, and I'd love to know if any of your listeners have ever had this experience. This was about, I have been in this house since 2013, so this probably took place in 2012. And it was one of those experiences where you wake out of sleep, but you're already sitting up and your eyes open and you are seeing another reality, but you are so linked into wherever you have been dreaming, and that when you open your eyes, it is as if you are still in the dream, but now you're moving into beta consciousness. And the vividness of what I was seeing, where I was living, was as if I were in, let's say, a house, a structure that was made all out of bamboo. But it seemed to be dark, dark stained and not blonde. But it had that sense that I was in an all bamboo and was looking maybe 100 feet, at least 75 feet, through what appeared to be spaces between rooms, a completely different structure than what we would find in an American building or house. And as I'm still very much looking in this world, at the end of all of these rooms, I see it in the space. It is a peacock. It is a beautiful, magnificent, glowing the way their feathers sheen with that greenish blue metallic. But it's about 75 feet away from me. And I'm staring at it. I am still, I know I'm sitting in bed, and yet where I am looking in front of me is not the apartment where I was living at all. It is this incredible structure with now this peacock. And then, to my complete and total astonishment, the peacock comes flying through the space window that I'm seeing, coming through all of these different rooms right at me, and I felt the feathers of the neck of the peacock wrap around my neck. I felt the warmth. I felt the feathers. It was astonishing. And then is when the reality of wherever I was changed to being in the apartment, being in bed. It was something like 3 o'clock in the morning. And here's the next thing I did. I got up immediately, went to my office, turned on my computer, went to Google, and I typed in, what does it mean to be hugged by a peacock? And to
wonderful.
My complete and total astonishment, these words came up. Being hugged by a peacock means that you will have an eternal destiny of your soul always surviving into eternity. You can look it up yourself. And I sat there in my computer thinking, I wonder what my soul sent out into the divine field, that there was a decision that I would be hugged by a peacock, even though it was in a kind of, what would you call it, a dimensional airlock between the matter world that we're in on Earth and a divine and infinite world that could generate this. It really truly is one of the more astonishing things that happened to me in my life.
Well, you know, it's an example of just how incredibly rich and complicated the mind is, and especially when it is interfacing with the conscious universe, because there's no way to know what was really happening.
I think my soul was responsible in some way for what happened.
In some way. I agree with you. I think so, too. Free Dreamlanders, speaking of souls, we have how the segue works, I don't know, but that's the segue to the free part of the show has now ended, and we are going on with our subscribers. Most of you never will subscribe, and I understand that. You get a lot for free, but I work with the visitors, and they want as much on the site to be free as possible, so that's what it's like. In case, I hope that you're curious enough about this wonderful human being, Linda Moulton Howe, to go to her website, earthfiles.com, to click through on Wednesday evenings, or basically whenever you can, because the shows they're live on Wednesday evenings at 7:30, but they stay up on YouTube. So there's an absolutely extraordinary wealth of information there, and it's such fun. She's there with her cats, and it's just an absolutely delightful program, and it's so human and natural compared to what you see mostly on TV. These people locked up in business suits with makeup on their faces and everything. It's just delightful. It's a real human being engaged in one of the world's most extraordinary inner and outer searches for the truth. So, and the other thing you should do is you should subscribe to unknowncountry.com, because this does not happen anywhere else. There's no one in the world who can interview, or I should say have a discussion with Linda like this. It's not possible. There's no place in the world where things like this happen, except here. Because this is the place where there is a real interface, an active interface, between human beings and non-human beings. And that's just a fact. That's what Unknown Country is. So join it. Participate. Become part of this remarkable world of contact, and that's where we are right now.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by unknowncountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.